After our successful 2024 pilot episodes, we are excited to present the initial episode of our 2025 Cave Talk season.
Welcome to Cave Talk, a podcast where we interview people inside the cave industry for tips, tricks, and the tea.
Welcome to Cave Talk.
Hello, welcome. Becca here, and I'm here with Jack, and we are talking to our NCA hosts this year for the NCA Cave Convention. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourselves and your cave.
Well, I'm Mark. I'm the father of the group of people here. And my wife is behind me, Jennifer. And we took over the cave in 1995, and I'm in a transition of passing it along. We have the Niagara Cave in Harmony, Minnesota, and we're in transition. Jenny and I are trying to retire, and the two boys are starting to take over. So you guys can introduce yourselves. And
sure, I'm Aaron Bishop. My parents moved to the cave in, like you said, 1995, so I would have been about 4 years old, and so that's been part of most of my life. I have some memories of living in a house before the cave, but not many of them. Most of the experiences I've had in life have been with the cave.
I'm a little jealous there. I wish I grew up in a cave. That'd be cool.
And I'm Ryan Bishop, Aaron's older brother. And yeah, we basically, our house is built on top of the cave entrance. So the cave is literally a part of our basement. You go down to the basement to enter the cave. And so it was kind of like our playground, especially in the wintertime when you can go outside and play. We'd go down there and have lots of fun.
Well, because it's actually warmer down there sometimes, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's 48 degrees all year round. So if it's, 10 below zero outside and you go down there and you only need a sweatshirt.
Wow.
Oof.
Right. Well, let's go ahead and start with one of our first questions here. What was your first experience ever in a cave?
Well, my first experience in a cave was at Niagara Cave. It was the early 1970s. My parents took me and my four brothers to Niagara Cave to visit.
That is super cool. And can you just introduce yourself for us really quick?
I'm Jenny Bishop.
Cool. So Mark's wife that he mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Awesome.
In the background.
Hey, you got to have those strong women in the background, right?
That's right.
So is that when you saw him? Was he your tour guide or across the room?
No, we did not meet till I was in college. And it involved a basketball game.
Oh, okay. So.
And yes, I won.
Of course, of course.
But yep. In the cave, the thing I remember most when I was a little girl was they had a formation that they called the skeleton's hand.
Oh, cool.
And that made an impression on me, and that's what I remember most.
Right. Does anyone want to share their first experience?
Well, this is Mark again. Yeah, it may have been Niagara. I went because we lived only about 45, 50 miles from Niagara Cave, and also Mystery Cave, which is a neighboring cave system that's now owned by the state park system. So I'm not sure which one I was at first. I know my parents did take me to both of them, and I also, through schools, we toured the caves as well. So both, but one thing, after I had toured Niagara Cave to purchase it, in 1994, I'd gone through some old pictures, and I saw a series of pictures that I had taken of Niagara Cave and of a visit when I was an adult that I had completely forgotten about, which was kind of like, oh yeah, I forgot about that one. That was kind of cool. So I'm going through these old pictures, like, oh, that's Niagara Cave, that's my cave. Like, I totally forgot, because I had been to so many other caves too. We'd been to Kickapoo Caverns. It's one of the things, we didn't do a lot of traveling, but my parents knew I was interested in rocks and caves and stuff. So that's one of the things that, one of the trips that we would do is it was something local and fairly inexpensive is, touring caves. So I got to see a few caves around the country.
Aaron Bishop here. I think the first memory of the cave, and it would be Niagara for me. I don't remember any cave before that, but just visiting the waterfall. I remember being on the bridge looking down, not knowing that in probably, I don't know, several months later that Dad was going to buy it. I don't know what under what circumstances it was that we visited the cave with you, but my earliest memory of the cave is standing on the bridge of the waterfall looking down, and then later on being like, oh yeah, we're here now. This is neat. Does this happen all the time?
I probably have the same memory as Aaron. Going on the bridge, looking at the waterfall for the first time. That's probably my first experience in a cave, was when we went there to move there.
Yeah, that's when we were actually. I took the family down when it was for sale and showed them what we were looking at purchasing. We hadn't completed the transaction yet, but it was for sale. And so I took my family down and we walked through the Niagara Cave to show them what it looked like. And that's the experience they're referring to. And they've been down there a few times since then.
What made you want to purchase a cave?
Well, I was involved in real estate before I purchased the cave, and I would buy properties and fix them up and sell them, and I would also working for the Department of Department of Agriculture, and so I had a position with them. We lived in the city of Rochester, which is a larger town. It's over 120,000 people, and the school district was a little bigger, and we wanted to move to a smaller school district. And so I was looking at developing a campground initially, and that deal fell through. And so then I thought, well, maybe I'll do a science and nature store. I thought that would be really cool. I'd seen one up in the Mall of America that was really neat, and I like science and nature things. And so I was in the process of getting some floor space in the local mall in Rochester to putting a gift shop type of thing in. And I think it was Jenny had seen in the newspaper. She said, here's something in the business opportunity section you might be interested in. So I looked at it and it said, limestone cave for sale in southeast Minnesota. And it's like, really? And being from the area, I knew that it had to be Niagara because Mystery Cave is now a state park. And so Niagara was the only private cave. So I said, I think I'm going to go look at a cave. So made arrangements with the realtor. And went down and took a look at the cave, and was pretty much decided that day that this was going to happen. I was pretty confident that we were going to be moving to Harmony, Minnesota, and living above a cave and owning and managing a cave for the next who knows how many years now.
I remember actually finding your plans, your project plans for your nature center shop idea this last winter. So in his office is a disaster. It always has been. And so this last winter, Amy and I were working on cleaning it out, and we found that, all those little notes of what your ideas were. So that was kind of fun to see. And we didn't throw those. We got rid of a lot of stuff.
He had my business plan. He ran across my business plan and some of the names I was going to potentially use for the gift shop and some of the items I was going to have in it. I had just all of my paperwork was in one kind of one location, buried in a drawer someplace, and they ran across it.
It's still in a drawer. It's just now tidy.
Hey, that's some good inspiration there, though. You know, you could possibly still use some of those plans in the future.
That we do have our gift shop. I mean, that kind of we got that aspect of it right there, plus a cave. I mean, the gift shop was a bonus, for me. The cave was obviously the primary attraction. And I've always been a rock hound my whole life as a little kid. Like I said, my parents took me to caves around the Midwest, and even across country. We went to in Arizona, the Grand Canyon Caverns. They took us to that when I was like 12 years old. We were traveling through the state and took me to that. And I've always been interested in that kind of thing. My degree is in physical geography, and so geomorphology was my interest, and so this all kind of came together as a perfect storm. The gift shop, when I purchased it, also needed a bunch of rehab, so I've been rehabbing houses for years, and so all of these features kind of came together as, you know, I can do this. So we actually purchased it on April 17th of 1995, and we opened it on May 1st of 1995. So I had less than 2 weeks to prepare and learn how to run a show cave business.
I'm going to go back to him being a rock hound. His mother used to tell me stories of the rocks he had under his bed. She worried that the floor would cave in, the ceiling that was over the living room.
No way.
So now both Ryan and Aaron went to school for geology. They kind of followed in that vein, because I guess they're living above a cave has a little influence on you.
So what were some of your first changes? How has the cave and the tour changed since you took it over and clearly have brought it a long way?
Well, there was a lot of changes initially, obviously. The gift shop and the cave both had some things that needed to be done. The gift shop looked like kind of a 1963 tourist trap, as kind of how I put it, and didn't have restrooms. It had outhouses in the back, which, you know, that's cool, I guess. But we got a lot of comments from people from, they'd come from the Minneapolis or some bigger city, and they'd go, you know, where are your rest bathrooms? And, you know, I said, they're outhouses up the hill, and they just kind of chuckle, yeah, really, where are your restrooms? And go, yep, they're really in up the hill.
But so, isn't that eclectic and charming?
Yeah, not so much.
These were not charming.
Yeah. Even though they weren't awful, they were not. Anyway, and then also, you know, the lighting in the cave, a lot of the substructure in the cave as far as staircases and that kind of thing had been a little bit neglected. So the first winter, we totally remodeled the gift shop, put bathrooms, restrooms in, and rearranged the whole gift shop, and we totally remodeled it so it looked like a whole different different experience. And then also, in addition to that, I started the rewiring of the cave. Luckily, I had a friend that was a master electrician who loved caves, and he said, I'll come and help you wire it by letting me be a part of the experience. So that was really beneficial, getting that started. So yeah, the wiring and the gift shop, the general appearance of the place is what we wanted to improve on, and we've been doing steps every year to do those kinds of improvements in the cave and outside the cave.
Now, steps, that's an operative word here. Now, you guys only have a couple, right?
Yeah. Total number of steps down is about 273 now. Then, of course, you have to go back up all of those. So, yeah, we generally let our guests know that there are about 550 stair steps round trip to go down. And we make sure to say stair steps, because if you say, oh, there's 550 steps, you're like, oh, that I walk lots of steps. It's like, no, that's not walking normally. That's actual stair steps. You're like, oh, okay. So, yeah, there are quite a few steps of steps in our cave for sure.
Yeah, we did that one yesterday, and it was a workout, I will admit. I was breathing pretty good when I got out of there. So
none of us really have gym memberships.
Yeah,
we just kind of go to work.
Right, gotta love that. Get paid to get in shape there. Yeah.
So as kids, when did you guys start giving tours in the cave?
Ryan, you're first.
Officially or unofficially?
Both?
I mean, I was officially on the payroll when I was 14, but I mean, officially giving tours at that age. But unofficially, I mean, I was leading people who would come to the cave after we were closed. He'd say, oh, Ryan, I got some people who just drove in, need you to do a tour. You know, like I was doing that for years before that. I don't know, probably 10, 11, 12, at least by 11, I know.
Yeah, they had an older brother named Chris that he had passed away when he was 13, but when people would drive in, they would say, oh, can't we see we've driven so far? And then I look at the boys and go, well, you guys want to take them through? You know, they said, and they usually go, they look at each other and go, sure, why not? So yeah, they were really like you said, 11, 12 years old, maybe. I mean, that was Christopher. Ryan was probably 10, and Aaron was like 5 or 6. So they all three of them a lot of times would tag along and just walk people through the cave at that point in time. And I just said, just pay the kids something for the experience.
That I got to say, if I went to a cave tour and I started getting led by a 10-year-old kid or something, I would be fascinated by that, I think, yeah.
You know it would be safe, though.
True, very true, very true.
Yeah, the people would kind of like, you know, kind of look as like, really? But these guys already knew their stuff, so by the time they got out of the cave, they were totally satisfied. They figured out, oh yeah, they're not just getting kids walking them through the cave, and they're actually getting a tour.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you guys can walk through it in the dark, right?
We have, yeah. We do. Have every year we bring down our guides, and we walk down through the cave with just lights or just flashlights, whether they're black lights or regular little lights, and you know, it's kind of neat to see the cave in that view. But then when we're at the very end of the cave, we turn off all the lights and have a leader, which may rotate as we go out, but without touching the cave walls, you get, you know, lead the group out of the cave. Just hands on shoulders of the person in front of you, duck the whole time, and that first person just kind of shuffles along forward, and you, as you go through, you know which step you're on, you know where you are in the cave the entire time, and usually Ryan and or I sneak ahead, you know, just kind of brush by them in some of these places, and they're like, who was that? And then, you know, can freak them out in later parts of the cave, but we can probably get out of the cave in total darkness without touching the walls within about 15, 20 minutes or so.
That is super impressive.
Yeah, it's easier to walk backwards.
Right.
I've found going out of the cave. It's just because you're less likely to stumble up the stairs because the back of your legs kind of hit it. You're always just aware of about where you're at, but you might be a couple steps off. But you just kind of slow down and tap wherever you're at with your feet and just keep going.
That is really impressive. I want to just put a note in there. If the power ever goes out in Niagara, don't worry. Your tour guide will get you out of there. Yeah.
Yep. Yes, they can.
So what is something you wish people knew about the cave industry that isn't common knowledge?
Well, I think it was interesting when even at this convention here, we were walking around with name tags on, and people come up to you and say, so what's going on? You know, and so we say, well, we're holding a convention for the National Cave Association. There's a cave association, and we go, yeah, the cave owners and managers around the country, and they go, caves, man, I don't know. I mean, I envy you guys. He said, how can you go in a cave? Aren't they scary? Aren't they spooky? I mean, or they're just too intense for me? And they don't understand that a lot of people don't understand that the commercial caves or caves that are open to the public have been made so people can get through them easily without having to worry about, you know, getting trapped or caught or crawling through tiny small spaces. They don't really, unless they've experienced a commercial show cave, they don't even really understand the concept of going through a cave. They don't know what it's like. So, and I had more than one person remark during this convention. They both said kind of the same thing. It's like, wow, I envy you guys how you can do that. And it's like, it's not really that hard. You just, you know, you have a guide, you walk through, and so they were amazed. They'd never been in a show cave before.
Wow, yeah.
The sheer immensity of your cave, not cavern, is just spectacular. I mean, it feels like you're walking through a canyon. I'm sure you've heard that a million times. And it's so tall, and yet we are... How deep does your cave go?
It's over 200 feet deep when you're at the farthest point.
And there are these rooms that are just over 100 feet tall. It's absolutely beautiful, amazing. We're going to put links to pictures and, of course, links to your cave.
Nice. You're referring to cave because we had a discussion earlier today about what the difference is between a cave and a cavern, which it really isn't. Just the RN at the end.
They're a little interchangeable, yeah.
They are exactly the same. I did want to deviate for 1 second. We are up here in beautiful Wisconsin/Minnesota, depending on where we are at the time. You guys clearly love the place that you're from because you arranged different activities. So do you want to tell us a little bit about this area?
Sure. One of our presenters that I had come, Tim Jacobson, he's an expert. He's an attorney, but he's also an expert in our region in the geology aspect of it. He's an environmental attorney, so he understands what type of area we live in, and it's called the Driftless Area, and that's what his talk was about. The Driftless Area is a region in southeast Minnesota and southwest Wisconsin, northwest Illinois, and northeast Iowa that the glaciers did not cover over the last several periods of glacial movement. It was an isolated area that was not covered by the glaciers, was not affected by the glaciers, so it did not cover this area with the glacial drift or the material that glaciers push with them, the sand and gravel and debris that glaciers push with them as they move. So that's why we get the name the Driftless, because there's no drift or glacial drift covering this area, and it makes it caves and caverns more accessible because they're not covered up, the entrances aren't filled in, so we can find them, and it also makes caves and caverns easier to be developed because they're exposed to this the elements of the rain, which causes for the solution or dissolving of the limestone and also the erosion. And in our case, our cave has an underground stream with a waterfall, and our cave was primarily formed by the running water with some solutional activity going on as well. But this Driftless Area is very unique, both geologically and biologically unique area, and that's why we had this speaker come, so he could explain to the rest of the NCA members what our region is and why it's a special area.
Right, and he also has multiple documentaries about this area, correct?
Yes, he's made Mysteries of the Driftless, which you can actually see on YouTube. And he's got another one. What's the name of that one?
I believe Decoding the Driftless.
Decoding the Driftless is one that you can purchase. And he's in a third one. And on the first two that they made both won Emmy Awards and international awards for their presentation for these documentaries. So the third one they're working on hopefully will be finished later this year. And it sounds like there's going to be some footage from Niagara Cave in these as well.
That is incredible. It is truly a strange phenomenon because I know most of the surrounding areas were definitely affected by glacial drift. So it's just so strange that there's this little pocket there that just wasn't affected. And because of that, our industry can thrive in this area, which is
right.
Really
and you
cool.
Probably a lot of people know that Minnesota is known as the land of 10,000 lakes. All those 10,000 lakes, which are actually more like 17,000 lakes, were formed because glaciers were on top of the surface, and they made depressions and melting waters and all that created all of these lakes here. In this Driftless Area, you won't find lakes. All we have here are rivers and streams because we don't have those the same geology. So we are the drainage areas basically for these glaciers as they melted over the thousands of years as they were receding. So so it's a different kind of topography that you'll see if you go just depending on where you start from, but from where we are at Niagara, you go 20 miles west of our place and you're already into the drifted area or the glacial area.
Wow.
Can I interject one more time?
Please do.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. We can always cut our little chit-chat. Stop the crosstalk.
So we know about that cave life. We know about growing up with caves. But for those of our listeners who don't know, what are some of the experiences that you have growing up with a cave?
No, there's no sense of time when you're in the cave. You're like, there's no clock. You can't see the sun, you know. So, like, and, you know, it's wet in the cave. It's very humid and very drippy in our cave. And so, like, your sleeping bags, even though we placed them on plastic, were completely soaked by, like, you know, 4 a.m. or something like that. And so, yes, we didn't make it till the sun rose.
Can you tell us the story of how your cave was found?
Sure. So back in 1924, the farmer who was operating the land above what would eventually be known as the cave, he's going through his property one day and noticed three of his pigs were missing. So sent a couple of his nephews and a hired hand to go searching for these three pigs, and they had wandered around looking for them for a little while. We're not exactly sure how long they did, but eventually they made their way to a sinkhole that was on the property and noticed that there were likely pig tracks around the hole, but of course none leading away from them. And they figured, well, might have an opportunity to find the pigs inside the sinkhole. So from our understanding, they went to the nearby town of Harmony, Minnesota to get some help. And someone was lowered down by a rope, found all three pigs in the cave about 60 feet down, tied ropes around the pigs' middles because they were all still alive, and had them all hauled back up to the surface. So 100 years ago now is when the cave was first discovered, and all thanks to the farmer looking for three of his pigs.
Thanks to the three little pigs. Wow.
So the reason I wanted to ask that question was it brings about something very unique about your cave, is that you guys don't really have anything living in there. There are no animals or anything like that because it had always been relatively sealed from the surface, correct?
There is life in the cave. I mean, we don't have anything large, like no bats, large reptiles, things like that, you know. But there are some little insects and arachnids, and we see worms down there. And other things get washed in, too, during times of heavy rain. They don't survive very long down there. But there are some small things that do exist down there. I've seen some little millipedes and centipedes and other things. Occasionally we'll see little fish in the stream as well.
No, not particularly. No mammals, you know, like I said, no bats or anything.
I've seen some little like salamanders and things, but you know, it had pigment. So I assume it was something that had spent part of his life on the surface and had been washed in or something. Some of the fish I have seen didn't have pigment, so they must have spent their whole life cycle in the cave, at least some of the fish in there.
Also, I remember when I was visiting your cave, there was a sign about some rules about animals in the cave, though, and there were a couple interesting animals on that list. So you have had people try to get animals into your cave, I've heard. So can you go into a little bit of detail on that?
Yeah, sure. So the sign says absolutely no dogs, cats, bats, or kangaroos in the cave. that is because all four of those types of creatures have either been in the cave or attempted to go into the cave. Of course, we allow service animals in the cave. But one particular instance, there was a guide who was just cleaning up in the restroom, you know, here and there, and there was an individual who was had a backpack, and he was kind of hunched over the sink and kind of almost looked like he was trying to hide something and didn't know really what it was. And the guide eventually saw that there was a little Joey, baby kangaroo being washed in the sink, and
oh my goodness. The
guy just kind of was like, well, I suppose I probably should have asked before I brought this in here. I think he asked if he could bring it in the cave, and What was the answer?
I said, you have a kangaroo. No, that's a first for us. We don't allow any animals in the cave, but we can babysit or kangaroo sit while you go on the tour if you like. And that's what we did. He put his little Joey in the backpack, and he just, you know, zipped it up so it would just nestle down in there. I mean, we could see his head poking out, and he kind of took a nap while the guy that brought him in took the tour of the cave. So
wow, yeah.
So the customers got a kick out of that. They would walk by and they would say, "Is that what it looks like it is?" And they go, "Yep,
right.
Yep. It's a kangaroo's."
It's definitely an interesting story there. Yeah, that's a new one. I have never heard before.
We also had a lady down in the cave ask the guide, you know, are there any bats in the cave? And, well, Niagara Cave, there's never been any bats of caves, or excuse me, no evidence of any bats in the cave at all. Even prior to the cave, there was no written record of any evidence of bats. But and the guide let them know that no bats in the cave. And she said, well, you're wrong. There are bats in this cave. And I mean, sometimes you look around, you might think you're seeing something out of the corner of your eye, but we don't have any bats in the cave. Well, she opens up her jacket, and just kind of like how you expect some random person with a bunch of watches dangling from the rack, you know, kind of like in the old cartoons.
Right.
She had some bats hanging on the inside of her jacket. Oh, so bats, goodness, have been in the cave.
Okay.
Brought in
just
by people.
Just a short visit, though.
Yes. Yes.
How did the tour guide react to that one?
I think just shock. Yeah, I think they
had
the jacket closed back up so we would not have bats loose in the cave.
Right, yes.
But yeah, it was strange things.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, our last question is, what is one of the craziest or wildest things that have happened in your cave? Obviously, we've heard a few. Is there anything else you'd like to add to that?
No, I think the most memorable one for me is our 2008 flood. We had over 125 vertical feet of water in the cave, and
wow,
the days after that were pretty miserable.
I believe it. Probably a lot of work went into cleaning up that.
It was one of the few times that the waterfall ceased to exist, not due to a lack of water, but to too much water.
Yeah,
it was underwater.
The water was no longer falling. Yes,
it
was raising.
It was about 50 feet above the waterfall.
Wow.
Now, how long did that take to drain?
You know, I usually put it about maybe 24 hours or so.
Yeah,
total of.
Yeah, it didn't take as long as you might think. It was out of there by late the next day.
Yeah.
And at least it took about 12 hours or so before we could get down there to start doing work, get down to a level where we could get in and start doing some stuff. But before it was out, we lost 2 days is all, which is surprising, being able to give tours. But it was still, you know, it drained down to the lowest portions of the cave. So we'd have to clean until we couldn't go any further and wait till it receded. So once we were able to catch up to the flood, cleaning wise, then it was just a waiting game, waiting for the flood to go down, and then, which made it easier, just time consuming. But the unfortunate part is 2 days later, we got another 3 inches of rain. So it raised up again, but not to that point. It did raise up about 50 feet, though, a couple days later. And so we had half the battle to contend with again. But, yeah, that was supposedly a 500-year flood, so let's hope that's the case.
And about 8 months before that, we'd had our 200-year flood. So
yeah, we had a couple of multi-100-year floods within a few months of each other. So, yeah,
wow.
It was pretty crazy.
Sounds like those may need to be renamed.
Yeah, let's just hope that's really the case.
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so
thank
much
you
for
so much
talking
for
to
being
us.
Here. Yeah, we really appreciate you guys also putting in so much effort to host the Cave Convention this year. I'm sure it has been a lot of hard work for you to have us have such a good experience.
Well, it's been fun. No, it's been good. We really enjoy showing our cave off, our property off, and it's always nice visiting other people, so we understand how other people want to see our cave and we want to see their cave, and so we want to show some of the people that had been there like over 20 years ago at a previous convention, and kind of show off what we've done over the last 20 years, the new improvements and stuff. But it's an experience that I'd like to have maybe once every 20 years, you know.
Yeah. Right. Well, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Jim, what should people do after listening to this podcast?
Make sure to check out the National Cave Association website at cavern.com. We'll be right back.